everybody. This is Mike Burke. I'm a corporate partner with Arnold Golden Gregory, and we're back with another episode of AGG Talks Cross-Border Business. And this is part two of a conversation with our new partner, Allison Raley, who brings, among other things, an in-house perspective to global scaling. And Allison, welcome back. Thrilled that you rejoined us for part two. Sort of building on our conversation earlier, you had mentioned something about jurisdictions, and my longer-term background involved a lot of work within China. And certainly there were times where clients would come and they'd say, "We want to go to China." And you're thinking, "No, you don't. Absolutely, no, you don't," or any place else. Can you walk us through sort of those considerations, the role of outside counsel, the GC and the GC with the board?
Right. So I think what's really helpful when you begin looking at global scale for a GC, typically the business will bring you, and it's not always this way, but I've typically seen it, they'll bring you multiple jurisdictions they're interested in expanding into. And your next question, because you're looking at it from, okay, now I need to go out and compile all this information to discuss with them. Your first question should be in that moment from step one, which of these jurisdictions is the key priority? And can you then give me a one, two, three, four, five on your priority list? So you can already save the company a great deal of time by asking that one simple question initially, because oftentimes when a business brings you this question for global expansion, they probably have one primary location in their mind when they actually break down the opportunity. Because typically, a company, I mean, if they're wisely looking at expanding, they're doing it because there's a business opportunity in a specific location,
Right.
either for a product or a target demographic or some specific reason that will open business revenue generating opportunities. So, one, find out what the real goal is from a jurisdictional standpoint. Is that a specific country? Is it a specific cluster? Is it a new product offering? And this is, you know, as we talked about in our first discussion, this is also when you nest in with your product team, because when a revenue opportunity is coming, I'm going to put money on products already been involved, and a good company will have already involved their GC as well through the ideation process. But even if maybe you get the phone call a little bit late, as a GC, go to your product team and say, what exactly are we trying to launch and what does it look like? Doing all of those background conversations before I even go and look at what does registration or licensure or expansion look like in another country. I need to, as a good general counsel, or like we discussed, sometimes companies use fractional external general counsels. So this is actually a CCO, Chief Compliance Officer, going through this process, which is totally great and fine. I need to know what I'm actually launching, what I'm actually trying to achieve before I go out and have a look about in the industry. So that's the first step. And I know it always seems backwards, because when you're sitting, the way it typically works is you're sitting in your chair, have going about your day, and you get a Slack or an email that says, hey, I want to move into India. And you're like, oh, okay, well, all products, some products, new products, what are we talking about here? So making sure, and it's the old associate adage, make sure you actually know the assignment before you go out and burn 50 hours trying to figure out something that's not the real question. So setting that up first. So understand the product. Two, when you're looking at expansion, most of these count as change in control anytime you add a subsidiary, which means you're looking at board approval or at least board informing requirements as a good GC, CCO. So when you go out, you need to be thinking about it from that standpoint. I'm going to put together a packet of information that needs to be presented to my board, to my CEO, to whoever is above me, like we discussed last time. Everyone has a boss. GCs have a boss. It's called our board. Our companies are our clients. It's very much like a private practice situation, except we get the joy of working with one client every day, all day, where private practice, we work with several. So with that mindset, going out and creating executive friendly information should be what you have in your mind as you're going out. So what I do next is then I typically reach out to my primary counsel. Most GCs have at least a primary counsel who can direct them either to some sort of information online or
right.
the primary regulator. There's a lot of work that you can do as a GC or a CCO on your own as a cost savings measure. But I always let my external counsel know. Step two, that's always my step two, is I tell my primary external counsel. They may know something that I don't know. They may be able to say, oh, Allison, did you see that consent order? Because general counsels, like I've said in the last call, have so much going on their plate. They really need to be able to rely on that primary external counsel relationship to help be a backstop to them. Ensure not only success of the company, but success of the general counsel too. That's also really important and something that we in private practice need to recognize and appreciate. We want our general counsels to be successful. We want our chief compliance officers to be successful, and we should arm them with the knowledge and support they need so that they are able to be successful with their board or their CEOs or their COOs, whoever they're reporting to.
Right.
So I let them know in case they have an issue spot. Then step three would be next I go and I pull up the regulation or the regulatory body that would be over my specific product offering or my company. And I start creating this memo. And the points I put on my memo, it's not always accessible myself. Sometimes I do need to go to my primary counsel and say, can you all look at this? AGG has great associates that do these jurisdictional surveys at a great cost for the client. You know, sometimes that is needed in these situations and always wise if it's a large revenue opportunity. You certainly need to gauge that as a general counsel. This is a big opportunity. You probably need your external counsel sooner, even though it's important to be cognizant billable hours. Most of your attorneys will be already for you. Engage them early if it's a large revenue opportunity. But when I'm creating this memo, either as a GC or a CCO, I'm looking first, is my product offering allowable? Is it legal? First of all, is it legal in the space? Then I'm looking at in-country office requirements. Does this require us to have an office in country? Does it require us to have just a person? And is that person an executive? Can that be any person? Does it have to be a CCO? One thing I see often when I'm doing jurisdictional surveys is the person required to be in country actually has to be an executive as well. So
right.
that's an
right.
added cost that you need to present to your board or your CEO, whoever is above you making this decision for expansion. Next, I look at, obviously, are we required to be licensed or registered? What does that process look like? This is typically when I involve my primary counsel to give me a synopsis. It can be just like two or three paragraphs about this is where we fall in line. You'll obviously ask for a more in-depth due diligence progress project later when you go through the actual application process. But this is just your initial board governance presentment. So you want to have that two or three paragraphs so you can explain to the board why you actually need to spend the money on this. And then the last thing I like to present is, if possible, I try to estimate attorney's fees, licensing fee, and to let them know if it's going to require a financial audit, what's the cadence of the financial audit, what's the cadence of the AML audits, just so they can kind of get a broad spectrum idea of what's going on. And then as a GC, it is very important that you present that and keep records of presenting that and what you presented to your board or your CEO as you go through these processes. I think that's often something we forget as GCs. The company stays the same. The person in the seat may change. So
right.
having the ability to then go back and say, okay, we looked at this 2 years ago. My predecessor looked at this 2 years ago. This was the decisioning. This is why we did it. This is why we didn't do it. It's a really helpful tool for you, for your company. And ultimately, as GCs, we are there to represent the company. So ensuring they have good legacy documents is also something a successful GC should be doing.
Right.
And then you present that to the board. The board either gives thumbs up, thumbs down, ask more questions, and then you get into the fun of actually going through the license and registration process.
Maybe slightly pivot, the requirement for having someone in the in country, and maybe recast that as what level of ongoing contact should you have with that jurisdiction? Sometimes we have clients come in and say, well, we'll be in the United States for a week every quarter, and we're expanding here. And you kind of think, well, okay, that's nice, but how do you evaluate that issue in-house?
So one thing that makes it so tricky as well is the continued evolving focus in the emerging technology world on remote work.
Yeah.
Now, I know a lot of the traditional companies are going back to in-house, but I'm sitting remotely. I'm a remote attorney. So it's a very different world and dynamic when you're looking at workers and executives in these expanded countries. So if you are expanding into another jurisdiction, let's just say India, because I said India earlier. If you're moving into India and you are required, given your specific business model, to have an in-country executive, you should ensure that they are set up for success. And I don't mean a 2-day onboarding process via Zoom where
Yep.
you ship them their computer and you say, good luck. That is not going to set yourself up for success. You need to have senior folks from wherever your primary, here we're talking US. So you need to have folks from your US team in India shaking hands with the regulators, helping ensure the infrastructure is correct for success of this executive, meeting with your banks. That's something that people often
A huge.
forget. Yeah, when you are going to a different country, you're having to establish relationships with banking and financial institutions in those countries.
Right.
So make sure that they know you. Make sure they understand your company. Create whatever is an appropriate business plan. And every country is a little bit different in what they expect a business plan to look like. Take the time to make the business plan appropriate for that country so your executive is armed with those presentations. Most companies have, weekly all-hands calls
Yep.
or other type of meetings. Include them in that so that they are apprised of what's happening in the country and so that they don't feel like they are a, even though they may be a subsidiary, they could be a truly expanded branch of your current company. They need to understand what's going on in the parent company or in the primary company. And that is critical to you not investing all of this money in an expansion and it failing. Your executives from the primary company should be there supporting your new executive in India, like we said. Your company should have the relationship with the regulators as well. You should have the banking relationship. You should have the local council relationship and who's doing your risk assessment and your independent audits. You should never just send someone and then ship them their computer and maybe a t-shirt and say, good luck. It's going to be a waste of your money if you do it that way.
At least what I've seen over the years, that's like probably the number one cause of expansion failure.
Right, agreed.
You don't put boots on the ground. Or worse, like you say, you do, and then it's like you don't support that person.
Don't support them. And I know that we as attorneys, we talk a lot about our regulators. Obviously, that's more what we're facing. But if you're opening a global expansion as a GC, you also need to be thinking about the finance element. And you will most likely have a CFO, of course. But you need to be arming that CFO, which is an additional step that we sometimes don't think about as GCs. We also, while I can't go out and do the things that a CFO can do, I can tell them, the requirements necessary for getting a bank account in country. I can tell them recommendations on who we should bank with. I can tell them, hey, I've spoken with our primary counsel who works with local counsel, and local counsel says this is the bank we should go with. You can do so much to support your CFO as well, who is also very busy. It's a goodwill building process. It's also critical to success in your expansion is understanding both the regulatory framework, but also the financial framework to launching in country, which I think as attorneys, not all of us, those that work internationally like we do are used to that, but it can be a forgotten add-on that we need to be providing as well.
Yeah, it's the upkeep cost question. Also preparing your, either it's, you know, your CFO or your chief legal counsel, that a lot of annual reporting requires a lot more information than Delaware does.
Absolutely.
You know, and you're reporting financials, you're audited or unaudited, you're drilling way down into the ultimate beneficial owner question. They've just often, we kind of see companies say, well, we do it this way here. You know?
Therefore, it should be the same there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not how that works. What that did trigger something in my mind in what you should be preparing your board for. Some countries require very onerous financial statements from the board or the CEO or whoever's deemed the board of that expansion, down to the stock level, down to the account, money in account level. So preparing your board that they may have to sign this type of highly invasive financial statement about them as individuals, right? Because our boards are individually liable, just like many of the C-suites individually liable. And you have to provide that type of information, which can be very invasive. And you may actually have a board, you may get down the road, like say, no, we're not doing that. And then you've done all this work. It's like the associate spinning analogy I gave earlier. You may get all the way down the road and then balk at the financial statement requirement in a licensing application. And then it's like, well, okay, I mean, you can present to the regulator, hey, can we have a third party in the United States review their financials and state that they are people in good standing and provide a summary?
Yep.
Yes, but not all regulations and not all jurisdictions are comfortable with that. Some of them may say, sure, give us the summary with a sign from, like, you know, one of the primary auditing companies in the US. And others may say, no, we want all of it.
Yeah, give everything. You know, the other thing that surprises people sometimes are the time loss.
Right.
From license filing to granting can be months.
Oh, months would be fast. It's a year to 18 months easy. Even in the United States with MTLs, I practice a lot in the money services space, and state MTLs can take 12 months depending on your product offering and business type. It's not an overnight process. So you as a company need to decide, is this going to be a viable option for us still in 18 months? Or is this just a one hit now type of benefit? And those are the type of things that you as a primary counsel can really support your GC in. Because that's something that we can typically find. We don't even need to go to local counsel. You can say, hey, I'm looking at X country. Can you give me a rough estimate? If your law firm has an international practice, can you give me a rough estimate on how long it's going to take to get this license? And you'd say, sure, Allison, it's going to take 24 months. And I would say, oh, really? Then I take it back and I'm like, well, listen, guys, and it's going to be 24 months till we get registered. And actually, looking down the pipeline, there's this new regulation coming in 2025 that's going to defeat this license anyways.
Right.
So let's wait. And those are the moments where you can really shift from, I think I said it, I don't think it was this in this episode. It may have been in the prior episode, where you shift from being a cost center, seen as a cost center to the business, which is the worst thing you can be seen as a GC and a CCO, to a revenue generating department as well.
Right. You're the trusted advisor at
yes.
that point, which is where we should be.
Absolutely. That's exactly how we should be. We should not be the no. We should be the, okay, I hear the goal. Here's another way to get to the goal that is either compliant or doable within your timelines. Yes, we should be the most creative. I've said this before in other conversations. A good GC and a good private practice attorney should be one of the most creative roles in an emerging technologies company. We should be creating as much as the product team does. And I know that we've mentioned my love of the product team before, but it's because we need to be deeply entrenched with them. We need to be moving fast and thinking how all the pieces come together for our companies to be successful, either as private practice or in-house as well.
And maybe most important in all of that is to have a tagline that says not if, but how.
Thank you, Arnold Golden Gregory.
Yeah,
not
that's
if,
right.
But how.
Yeah. For listeners, that's our tagline that we sometimes often make fun of, but you know,
yes,
but
it
the
is
spirit
on our
is right.
Business. It's
yeah.
on our business cards. So not if, but how. But it's true. I mean, I'm being tongue in cheek, but that really is true. And that goes for if you're being a CISO, if you're a CCO, if you're a GC, any of those positions, you are critical to the success of the company, not because you're the gatekeeper from a legal or compliance or IT perspective, but because you can help your client be successful by being creative in how you approach the if, the question that they have.
You know, earlier we talked about the boots on the ground issue being a big factor in failure. What about success? What do you think the one or two things an emerging company can do that increases their chances of success in a foreign market?
Well, I think the relationships with your regulator and banking partners and third-party service providers, be that your auditors or your law firm, et cetera, that is critical. Secondly, understanding the cost and what you're actually seeking. Are you seeking to truly be a presence in this country that you're looking to expand in? If so, then you need to give the headcount, the resources, the finances to that country so they can be successful. It won't be successful if you say, hey, one person, please go out and conquer this whole jurisdiction on your own, far away from us. That's not going to be successful. But if you allow them to secure a team, secure the relationships, empower them with decision making, you're more likely to see success. And then third, I would say documentation around what you're doing. So the US is highly regulated. So are many other countries. And we jokingly said, well, we do it here, let's not do it there, or what we do here doesn't always work there, which is accurate. And not always, but your primary company probably has a very built out structure from a compliance, legal, risk department standpoint and how they document what they're doing and making sure this new branch is following a similar documentation framework, strategy, thought process is also critical because they are going to be audited, maybe not the same, maybe more.
Right.
Yeah, it depends. And presenting a mature, thought out, complete package in those audits, it will set you up for success with your regulators, with your banking partners, reduces your risk of enforcement fines, reduces your risk of getting your license pulled. So it's just really, truly, what is your ultimate goal? Is it just to be there for 18 months because you want to try to launch this and see if it works? Or are you really wanting to make a concerted effort? So I think having those hard conversations internally is really critical in success or failure.
And part of that conversation is also being clear about you're a US company. You expand internationally, you've got a couple new sets of laws you've got to think about in connection with that. Because sometimes we have companies that say, well, we've never bribed, we would never bribe, right? Why do we need an FCA policy? And like, well, you know, trust us.
you do need it. Yes. Yeah. I mean, there's several firms that have it, but coming to a firm that has an international practice already ingrained within the law firm, we know enough to spot the problem and we either know how to solve the problem ourselves or we've got local counsel in the area you're looking to expand that will know how to address X, Y, or Z.
Right.
So surrounding yourself with support as a GC, CCO, CISO is really very, very important. There's also organizations, if you don't have the budget or a law firm, that you can join, like Tech GC or the C-suite, to really provide yourself as much assistance as you can possibly get in those very, very new startup type positions.
Well, Allison, that's great. I think we're out of time on this one. If listeners want to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
Yes. So I'm on the Arnold Golden Gregory website. You can go and look me up. It's Allison Raley. And then my email is allison.raley@agg.com. I'm very active on LinkedIn. So
you are. Yes.
As well. I'm very active there. I also, if any of the AGG folks are still listening, I do watch who likes the posts and shares the posts. So
yep.
You'll be in my good graces or not good graces by interacting on LinkedIn. So you can find me on LinkedIn as well. I'm always on there. It's a great way to stay in touch with my international colleagues and clients as well.
Well, that sounds great. Allison, thank you for your time on both parts one and two of this conversation. And folks, this concludes our latest episode, AGG Talks Cross-Border Business. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with another one. Thank you.